Hey, baseball fans, we are back once again for this is the sixth, Matt, I got it right this week, the sixth edition of the MLB Daily Dish podcast, the Roster Rhetorical. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm good. And we are bringing back for this week the wonderful emperor of hot takes.
Eesh.
Mike Bates is back. Mike, how are you?
I have a scotch and it sounds like I'm going to need it.
Mike, you haven't really, you're not sticking with the nickname that I gave you. I'm a little disappointed.
Listen, I love you, Chris, but, yeah. All right. Scotch. Good.
Maybe it'll grow on you. Just give it a couple more episodes.
I'll give it a try.
Well, all joking aside, we have a ton of things that we have to get to in this episode, and some things that got thrown in our way right before the show was supposed to air. And maybe it was a good thing that we didn't record last night, guys, so we could get this trade in now. The big trade that happened just a couple minutes ago, right before we went on air, between the Rays and the Mariners. The Rays acquired Brad Miller, Logan Morrison, and Danny Farquhar from the Mariners in exchange for right-hander Nathan Carnes, left-hander CJ Reifenhauser, probably mispronounced that, and outfielder Boog Powell. So, guys, I guess this is where we'll start tonight. Matt, I'll start with you. What did you think of the trade? We started right away with some activity, and free agency hasn't even started yet.
Yeah, I was kind of a surprise just, 10, 15 minutes ago or whatever it was now that, on Twitter, just see a six-player trade this soon after the World Series is not something that I don't think anyone was expecting. But I think it's a good trade for both sides. They kind of addressed some needs that each side needs. The Mariners didn't have the greatest pitching staff last year, and Nathan Carnes can step into the rotation immediately. And Tampa is always looking for cost controllable players, and Brad Miller fits that agenda.
And Mike, we were talking before the show about the different pieces in this deal and what each side was getting. And you were doing a little, I don't want to call it scouting, but you were looking into the players. What is the big takeaway from this that you see?
Well, I think Carnes is, of course, the big get in the trade. He's already 27 years old, but he had a very successful year for three-fourths of a year for the Rays this year, and now he's going to move on to a really good park for pitchers in Seattle. He strikes out almost a batter an inning. He's cost controlled through, I think we said, 2020, which is great, and certainly the Mariners with some of their higher end contracts could use some younger cost-controlled pitchers. He's a little bit more of a fly ball guy than a ground ball guy. And, at 27, he's kind of a finished product, I guess. His fielding independent numbers aren't terribly special. He did, like I said, strike out almost a batter an inning, but he walked plenty of guys. He allowed a bunch of homers. Maybe that'll play better in Seattle, but maybe not. Reifenhauser just kind of seems like a toss-in. I am fundamentally opposed to Boog Powell just on principle, because there's already a Boog Powell, the former Orioles great, and I don't much cotton to this young guy thinking he can just go around calling him of Boog Powell and we're all going to go along with it. He's a young outfielder. He's got a little bit of speed, some really strong on-base skills, questionable base running, it sounds like, and relatively little power. Maybe he becomes something. I think this is the Mariners selling really low on Brad Miller, though, right?
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, Miller's a guy that can do a lot of things for you. He's only 26. He can play in different spots, and Matt, you know this better than I do. How long is he under control for?
Through the end of the 2019 season.
That's a lot of time for a bat in a lineup to have that type of cost control. And for a team in the Mariners that have a ton of contracts that they've given out, the Cano is getting paid a lot. Felix Hernandez is getting paid a lot. It's nice to have these cost controlled guys that can put up good numbers and they're not costing you a lot of money. And it's no secret that the Rays are a team that operate under this mindset of getting cost-controlled guys, both pitching and hitting, and using them to win the division and go to the playoffs. So it's no surprise that this is the guy that they wanted. But the main takeaway that I have from this, and I want both of your guys' thoughts. I'll go to you first, Matt. This is Jerry Dipoto making an impact right away. I mean, he just got to Seattle, and whether you like the trade for Seattle or not, he is already starting to try to revamp this roster for next year.
Yeah, and I like the way that he's doing it rather than, say, the way that A.J. Preller did it, which was just trade for a bunch of random guys and hope that they stick together. Carnes is going to be, I think, a really good option for their rotation, in which only one pitcher posted an above-average F4. I believe Felix Hernandez came in at 2.8. At the end of the year, Tajuan Walker was just a tick below, and then Iwakuma kind of had a rough year. I think he was injured a little bit. Strikeout numbers went down, and his ERA wasn't as crisp as in 2014. So I think DePoto did really well, and then Boog Powell, he had a really good 2015 season, both in Double A and Triple A. I think his OBP in Double A was 408, and then in Triple A it was 360. So I don't think you'll see him on the opening day roster, but with the way that we've seen prospects kind of called up in the last few years, I definitely would not be surprised to see him on the Mariners at some point in 2016.
And you mentioned before the show, we do a lot of talking before the show, if you haven't noticed. A lot of this is planned out beforehand. But Matt, you brought up a tweet that you saw from Buster Olney that said that there's a lot of activity going on the trade market already with teams calling each other, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is the sign of teams realizing that they can maybe do a little bit more damage in the trade market than they can in the free agent market. There's a lot of guys out there in the free agent market this year that are going to command a lot of money, and maybe some teams are trying to shy away from that and try to keep their dollars locked up for some extensions down the road, and they can maybe move some pieces in order to help them instead of getting bats.
Well, I think that's a really interesting point. I think one of the other ways you might recontextualize that is you're getting young, cost-controlled players for positions you need right away before that free agent market really opens up, so that you can fill the holes that you need to fill. So Seattle is dealing Brad Miller, who they essentially decided was not going to be their starting shortstop anymore. They're going to really commit now to Ketel Marte. And with now Miller bringing back a starting pitcher, well, Miller and Logan Morrison and Danny Farquhar, bringing back a starting pitcher who can slide into that rotation, they can reallocate those dollars that they might have needed to spend on two pitchers, for instance, and just get one. It's a good way to kind of shuffle the deck chairs before you really have to go start playing with real money.
It's also sort of this idea that if you could try to maximize the money that you have. You know, not a lot of teams have the ability to spend like the Yankees and the Dodgers, so they need to maximize every dollar they have. And this is one of the ways that teams do that. They address a need through a trade, and then they can devote a lot of that money to the one big need that they have. So I think we're going to see more of this winter, just because of some of the big names out there and how much money they're going to command. And maybe teams only have the ability to go for one big bullet, and they might have to tinker and get the other pieces they need from other spots. So it'll be really interesting to see. We're already getting started. Free agency hasn't even happened, and we already have a trade. So this will be interesting. I want to switch gears a little bit, though, guys, because the main reason why we wanted to get together this week and do this show was I don't even know how to describe the situation that went on in Washington this week, with them sort of forcing themselves into reconsidering who they were hiring as their manager. Originally, they were going to get Bud Black. It was a done deal. They were going to announce it in a press conference. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we heard that they weren't talking to Black. That had fallen through. That deal was done when it came to finances. And out of the blue, you know, the guy that they interviewed second, Dusty Baker, came in and has accepted the offer and is now the manager of the Washington Nationals. And I don't even know where we start with this. Mike, you wrote a really good article this week about, did the Nats screw up and hire the right guy? And I just want you to take us through your thought process while you wrote that.
Sure. I think it's pretty clear the Nationals had a preference. They were going to go with Bud Black. They lowballed him in terms of their initial offer, and he felt insulted, and he pulled out of the negotiations. You can spin that as him not having realistic expectations, but ultimately he's a veteran manager. He's really well respected, and he felt like he was worth more than the Nationals did. I don't necessarily think he's wrong, and I don't necessarily think the Nationals are wrong. But when the Nationals circled back around to Dusty Baker, they found somebody much more amenable, and really somebody who might be much better suited to the roster that they have put together. This is a team that really collapsed down the stretch. This is a team that underperformed expectations, and this is a team that embarrassed itself quite a bit with the Jonathan Papelbon and Bryce Harper meltdown, with the kind of the stories that came out in the at the end of the Matt Williams era about how much he had lost this team. Dusty Baker, for all of the criticism that he's taken over the years, comes into this job with a ton of respect within the game, particularly with the players. He's always been a player manager. He has done a great job of getting clubhouses to, if not come together, at least coexist. So I'm thinking specifically of Barry Bonds and Jeff Kent, two of the most difficult teammates anybody has ever had, and two of the most diametrically opposed teammates anybody has ever tried to put together. And while they didn't like each other, they made it work for a lot of years in San Francisco. Dusty Baker has a lot of experience in Chicago. He's a lot of experience in Cincinnati in helping to develop actually young hitters. Joey Votto, for instance, and he is, I think fairly well suited for this team, especially because I think a lot of the concerns about him overworking starters are about a decade old, and he's kind of moved past that.
Matt, you've been very vocal about that point on Twitter. I've seen you tweet about this a lot, the fact that there's a stigma attached to Baker about his ability to handle pitchers and how he doesn't really do that well. And the joke is that Steven Strasburg's arm is going to fall off again. And I don't know if you can answer this because we weren't in the room when it happened, but how much of that do you think weighed on their decision and maybe leaned them toward Black in the first place? And then when the financial things fell through, they were kind of okay with being able to go to Baker.
Yeah. I don't know if that really had anything to do with it. He ultimately, at least before he wound up getting the job, he was second in the running to be the manager when they first selected Black. So they probably weren't too worried about that. I think that Dusty probably had something to do with the downfalls of Wood prior and maybe potentially Homer Bailey, his elbow, I think 1 or 2 years after he was taken out of manager, his elbow fell off. But I saw an interesting point. I want to say it was from Harry Pavlidis. I'm probably mispronouncing that. He thinks the Mark Pryor, the loss of his career had more to do with the collision with Giles more than anything that Dusty had to do with it. But I think the funniest thing from this entire situation is Rizzo earlier today, or it might have been yesterday now, can't remember my days anymore, said that sometimes the negotiating process also tells you a lot about the people that you're negotiating with, which at least from an outsider's perspective seems to be a shot at Bud Black and kind of how he maybe felt disrespected by a deal that Rizzo and co didn't think was disrespectful. But then it came out earlier today as well that Don Mattingly got a 4-year deal for $10 million, which comes out to an average annual value of $2.5 million, which I believe is $0.5 million more than the entire deal that Black was eventually offered after the 1-year contract offer fiasco.
Yeah, no, it's it's sour grapes by Rizzo, and it's really embarrassing, and he really shouldn't be. I mean, just be classy and stop talking. I do want to go back to this whole Wood Pryor, Carlos Zambrano issue, because you're absolutely right. He did ride Pryor and Zambrano especially hard during the beginning of their career. Wood had arm problems long before Dusty Baker showed up, thanks to Jim Riggleman and Bruce Kim and Don Baylor, who was the manager, who were managers at Chicago before Dusty got there. But he did ride those guys hard. He did make them throw more pitches than any other starting rotation in baseball. But really, in the last 10 years, what we've seen is Dusty Baker's reliance on his starting pitchers relative to the rest of the league has gone down significantly. And while he was making them throw an average of 10 pitches more than anybody else in baseball in 2003, he's settled in between two and four more per start over the last decade of his managerial career. So, you know, again, I think when we look at Dusty Baker, we have to, you know, we acknowledge that maybe he's not perfect and maybe he does rely on starting pitchers a little bit more than he should, but he has also learned from the past. He is capable of learning and he's capable of taking instruction. And if Mike Rizzo can shut up about Bud Black and can instead focus on coming up with a plan of action with Dusty Baker, this could be a really successful pairing and a team that gets pointed in the right direction finally.
Yeah, and I also think that the underrated move of at least the Nationals early offseason is getting Mike Maddux after the Rangers cut off negotiations.
Oh, absolutely.
That's going to be a huge steal for the Nationals.
And Davey Lopes.
Yeah, and Davey Lopes. So they've got a pretty nice coaching staff.
Davey Lopes might be the best first base coach of all time simply because he's the only first base coach of all time that we know who seems to have had a measurable effect on teams base running. Having him there to help with Michael Taylor and Trey Turner and other and Bryce Harper even, who's not a slow guy, and Jason Wirth, who had success stealing bases under Davey Lopes. I think this is a fantastic pickup as well. It's a small thing. It's not going to add a ton of value, but it's some value. And, you know, the Nats really need to focus on getting to the World Series before everybody loses their jobs.
And this whole situation was an opportunity for the Nationals to sort of reset after the year that they had. It didn't go the way they wanted it to. There were so many, it was like a circus along the road there. I mean, at points, everyone was just like, what are the Nationals doing? And when they got rid of Williams, you thought, okay, maybe they can go out and get a guy that can fit their clubhouse atmosphere and help them fix those in-house things that plague them throughout the year, and then the on-the-field product can get better. Mike Rizzo can focus on retooling the roster. And you thought that if they could go out and get a good manager and wipe their hands from the Matt Williams thing, everything would be okay. And then they go out and they make this a fiasco, and they make this a difficult thing to get through. And you just feel that every time they have a chance to sort of wipe the slate clean and get started again, that they're not able to do that. And now they go through this whole process where they've hired Bud Black and they change their mind and they go to Dusty Baker. Now Mike Rizzo has to go out and fix a team that has lost a ton of talent, and he has to recruit free agents in to what is now becoming the circus of Major League Baseball. And that's where I want to go right now. Is the Nats are one of the more interesting teams this offseason from the standpoint of the talent that they lost and the fact that they need to get back to where they were a couple years ago when they were competing to win the National League crown. And guys, now that this Dusty and Bud Black and manager stuff is over, where does Mike Rizzo go from here? Where does his focus needs to go in terms of getting talent to fix this team? Anybody can jump in at any time. It's okay, guys. It's a friendly environment here.
Well, I think he needs to help with the rotation a little bit. I think the Nats are probably one more pitcher away. They are, you know, they're losing. They either need to re-sign Jordan Zimmermann or find somebody else. They've got Gio. They've got Tanner Roark is going to be available. Steven Strasburg obviously is still going to be there, and Max Scherzer. But, you know, I don't know how much I'd want to rely on Tanner Roark as a starter. They have the opportunity to turn to Joe Ross or A.J. Cole or Lucas Giolito as well, I suppose. But fixing that bullpen, fixing that rotation would be really helpful. They have some good young players in Michael Turner and Michael Taylor and Trey Turner to slide in in center field and at shortstop. I think they need to get deeper. And one of the problems that they had was just being very brittle this year and not having, Dan Uglas, the guy who got 141 plate appearances for them. Dan Uglas should not get 141 plate appearances for anybody. Ever. They're losing Ian Desmond. Are they losing Danny Espinosa? Is he around for one more year?
I think he's still there. I'm not sure.
Well, let me check our handy-dandy free agent tracker.
Who wrote that free agent tracker? Oh, look at that.
Espinoza is not a free agent.
Okay.
No, he's going to stick around. But Jason Wirth was hurt a bunch this year. Yunel Escobar is going to be 33, so you can't really count on him staying healthy. Wilson Ramos seems to come up with something that hurts him every now and again, and even when he's healthy this year, he's not that good. So just kind of building around that core lineup is going to be important for the Nats.
Well, free agency begins tomorrow, right? I'm getting the day right.
Yeah.
So free agency begins tomorrow, which means teams have to have qualifying offers in. And we're discussing the Nats. And, Matt, you can add to the Nats conversation if you want. But I want to turn to you and ask what teams, and you can just throw them out there and we can have a dialogue about this, but what teams do you think are going to be big players this offseason? What teams do you think need to be big players? What do you see transpiring from a team perspective?
From a team, I mean, I think the Nationals are definitely one to watch. You look at Trey Turner, he's a big question mark still. I know he's had a really good minor league career, but you don't know about a prospect until, you know, he's proven himself at the major league level and in limited action last year. He did not prove himself yet. Michael Taylor in center field or whatever outfield position they decide to stick him in, he's going to need to pick up the production as well. So I think Rizzo and the Nationals are a good team to watch. As for another one, the Blue Jays are interesting. They're losing potentially Estrada. They brought back Dickey, which I was kind of surprised by. I would have spent that $12 million elsewhere, potentially on a different pitcher. I don't think you kind of know at this point what you're going to get from R.A. Dickey, and I just think you can get more from $12 million elsewhere.
The emperor of hot takes.
Yeah, no, that's... I'm going to try to dodge that nickname. But anyway, no, I think one team that we should really think about this offseason is Houston. first of all, they had a great season. They outperformed expectations by a ton, and they really want to make sure that they don't backslide. They finally got that fan base excited again after so many years of rebuilding. And, you know, improving this club is going to be really important. They have a ton of minor league talent. They don't really need to plug up holes long term that should go to younger players eventually. That said, they could maybe use some help at first base or maybe in a corner outfield spot or most definitely in the rotation. I think the Astros payroll is so low. You know, it was in around $60 million this year. They're a team that could add somebody like a Zach Greinke or a David Price and not feel a dent. It would be a huge coup for this team to then have two aces at the top of their rotation between whoever they get and Dallas Keuchel. And that would be just a fantastic starting rotation. It would probably make them favorites in the AL West.
I'm going to pick a team for the same sort of reasons that you just stated, Mike. I'm picking the Mets, and I know people are going to say, oh, you're being a homer, but the Mets...
I'm going to say, where are they getting the money?
Well, and that's one of the points that I'm going to make, is that this is a team that, after six losing seasons, just made it to the World Series. So now, there's a fan base and there are expectations that you have to make it to at least the NLCS every year, because, you know, you could take a step backwards a little bit, but this is not a team that can afford to miss the playoffs or get knocked out in the first round or the wild card game. That's just unacceptable with the standard that they've set this year. And they have a lot of money coming off the books. Bartolo Colon is coming off the books. You have Murphy coming off the books. That's $18 million right there. So you have a payroll of the winter starts of $92.5 million. And Sandy Alderson said at his press conference this week that they envision a payroll higher than what it was last year. And the opening day payroll was $101 million. So you take that into account, that they have that money. They have the money from Cologne, Murphy, the money that they recoup from, you know, Henry Mejia and David Wright. And they have some money to spend. But I just don't know where they're going to go. They have an outfield issue that is just... It's logjam with players and not logjam with talent. Curtis Granderson was probably the MVP of that team this year. He's going to play right field every day. Michael Conforto was a stud as a rookie for this team, was really a key part of the lineup, underrated as they made their playoff push. He's going to play left field every day. They're going to get him starts against lefties and righties. And you're probably going to play Juan Lagares every day in center because of his defense, and that leaves Michael Kadir on the out. So you're not going to re-sign Cespedes, which means they're going to have to get the power production from somewhere, and they're losing Murphy. So they have some holes that they need to fix, and if they don't, they may not be able to even win the division next year. I mean, they have a rotation that can win them games, but it would look very similar to the team that was a couple games above 500 and chasing the Nats most of the year. So they're a team that really has to get creative and do something, because if they don't, they're going to miss the playoffs.
You know, I think that's, you know, those are good points. I think one of the things that gives me pause is, as always, are the Wilpons. And what are their goals? You know, I think they'd like to have a winning team, but is that their primary motivation? You know, definitely with the Astros, I think at this point the goal is definitely to put a championship caliber team on the field. I think the Mets, I think their goal is to put the best team they can afford on the field. And I'm not sure how realistic it is to fill in those positions with the money they're actually going to be willing to spend. You know, I would like to have a lot more faith, and I'd like for the Mets to come back next year. I don't want to be a doom and gloom guy with them. You know, they're going to get Travis d'Arnaud for the whole year next year, whose name I'd been pronouncing until the playoffs. They're going to get a full year of him. They're going to get a full year of hopefully Harvey and Syndergaard and Wheeler coming back. And those are big pluses for this team. But at the same time, they're going to need to keep all those guys healthy. And one thing I know about young pitchers is that they're not very cooperative as far as that goes. So, yeah, I really question whether they're going to have the fortitude to put the team on the field that they're going to need.
Well, this is sort of a turning point for them, since, you know, they haven't won in 6 years and now they got to the World Series. If there's ever a time to spend, it's now. I mean, they're just,
yeah, but the market's always going to be there is the thing. The Mets fans are gonna be there. They're gonna follow the team, and they're gonna jump back as soon as the team is, you know, even has a prayer of being competitive again. You know, I think Houston, just to provide some contrast, still has that credibility problem, and still needs to prove that they are all the way back.
Yeah. Well, we've mentioned some teams, and from what I've heard from Mike, Houston is easily his sleeper team for the offseason. Is that fair, Mike?
That is fair.
Okay. So, and we know that teams are going to be active, but there are some players that are out there, and there's a lot of talent available, that are going to be trying to get the most money and to try to find a place that fits for them. And, guys, I don't even know where we should start in terms of breaking down some of these big-name free agents. Matt, we haven't heard your voice in a while. I want to make sure you're still alive. So I will go to you first. The big free agents, who's going to be sort of the, I don't want to say trendsetter, but the first domino that falls that sort of gets all of this going? Who do you see making the most money? Just give us an overview of this free agent class.
Well, for most money, I think it has to be Jason Hayward. He's probably the most valuable and the youngest out of all of the free agents that are available. I think a lot of the estimates I've seen have been around $200, so it would be pretty low, $200 million. And I think that's definitely doable. The Cardinals are going to be a factor in there. I don't think the Red Sox would be, just because of how much money they spent last offseason, and hearing that they're more open to trades than they are to signing more players. There are obviously a lot of starting pitchers this year, but they seem to be more focusing on trading for an ace rather than signing one. So that at least signals to me that they're not trying to spend a whole bunch of money this offseason.
Mike, the pitching is sort of the big prize this offseason with Price, with Greinke, with Cueto. What is it going to – I don't know how to phrase this in the best way possible, but these guys are probably $150 to $180 million pitchers. And they're going to have a ton of teams looking into them. Is this going to have an impact on these on the secondary teams that are maybe looking at a guy like a Bartolo Colon or a Mike Leake or one of those second-tier guys that may wait to see what the top-tier guys make? How is that going to affect the market? Are we going to see something like we saw this year with the trade market where it where it's just going to be slow for a while and then once one domino falls, it just goes from there?
Well, I think – I mean, that's really hard to say. I think any team that sees itself as still being in – on somebody like David Price or Zach Greinke or Johnny Cueto is going to hold back the rest of their money that they're going to want to allocate toward a Scott Kazmir or a Brett Anderson or a or a Giovanni Gallardo, all good pitchers, all of whom are going to make in excess of $10 million, but you hold out for that ace. So those guys are going to have to wait a while. I think if a team identifies one of those second tier guys that it really really wants, it would be absolutely smart to come in with a strong offer early and just really. I target the guy they want and get him because they're going to have the playing field all of themselves for a couple of months while everybody else sorts out where these three aces are going to go.
Is there a specific player for you that you feel is probably the most important one for this offseason?
Oh.
I know, we threw out a bunch of names beforehand, but I was just sitting here thinking if there was one guy that I was, you know, so closely I wanted to pay attention to see where he went.
Well, I would definitely look at Greinke and Price. I think they have the ability to, you know, no one player has the ability to tip a pennant race all by themselves, but they do have the ability to tip a postseason series all by themselves. So watching those two to see where they're going and who they're interested in will give us a better idea of who's really willing to open up their pocketbooks this winter, and who sees themselves as being a contender, not just next year, but for years into the future. Cause those guys are studs. Those are, high pedigree pitchers, with relatively few injury concerns who you could see potentially being, top of the rotation starters for another 5 years.
Matt, for you, is Jason Hayward that guy, the guy that you're locked in and paying attention to?
Yeah, I mean, just because of how many starting pitchers are available this year, I think the offensive side of free agency is a little more interesting because Jason Hayward is the gem of the gems, so to speak. He's, you know, I want to say 27.
25,
oh my God, okay. I thought maybe he was going into his 26th season at the youngest. But so he's, you know, obviously going to get a 7 or 8 year deal that might have an opt out with the way that contracts have been going lately. But actually the player that I'm, it sounds weird to say, but the player I'm most interested in seeing, at least as of right now, to see where he goes is John Lackey. He put up a pretty good season with St. Louis this year. And a lot of years would have gotten more attention, but with, you know, Jake Arrieta, Kershaw, Greinke, and all the other guys that were doing their thing this year, he kind of fell by the wayside. A team like Chicago that kind of needs a really reliable third starter, I think Lackey would be a great option. Or Cleveland with the rotation that they've got. They didn't have the best start, but, I want to say they finished at 500 or a game above 500. Francisco Lindor has turned out to be a much better hitter than I think a lot of people were expecting. And he might actually, you know, challenge Correa for the Rookie of the Year award this year.
For me, I'm going to pick a specific pitcher, but I'm going to pick one that we haven't really talked about, and that's Jeff Samardzija. From the standpoint that he was when he got traded from the Cubs to the A's, was that right? Did I say that trade right? Cubs to the A's?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cubs,
yeah.
Okay, Cubs to the A's. I want to make
sure. In 2014.
He was sort of the hot pitcher at the time. You know, he was the guy that everyone wanted to get because they knew the Cubs couldn't hold on to him. And then you had the A's move him to the White Sox in a deal this past winter. And now he's a free agent, and he's not coming off of a good year. He's age 30, and he had a year where he had a 4.96 ERA and a 4.23 FIP. So this is a guy that probably could have played his way into the tier of David Price and Greinke and Cueto, but because of lackluster play, he's probably the top of that second tier. And he's probably going to be the one of the main guys that's going to have to wait for the dust to settle in terms of the top guys before he can sign, because if he starts getting into bidding wars with other teams while they're still negotiating with Price, he may be left out to dry and not get the money that he wants. So he may be better off waiting and seeing what the other guys get. So to close the show, I want to put you guys on the hot seat a little bit. We didn't talk about this before the show, but while the show was going on, I sort of came up with this. So you're going to be on the hot seat. No pressure, everybody. But I want your one free agent prediction, the one that you're most confident in, the player and where he goes, and the one team you see making a big trade. So, Matt, I'll put you on the seat first. You're up. Free agent prediction, where he goes, and the team that makes the biggest trade.
Okay, so my free agent prediction, I'm going with the Indians again with my lackey pick, but a different player this time. I'm going to say Colby Rasmus winds up on the Indians. And as for the team that makes the biggest trade, I'm going to go with Boston. It just seems like with Dombrowski in there and his reputation, that they're going to make a pretty big splash trade-wise. There was an article earlier on, or a report earlier, that they're very willing to trade top prospects out of a trio of Benintendi, Moncada, and I can't remember the last pitcher that was mentioned. But I think, at least from the report, Jackie Bradley Jr. seems to be the outfielder that they might be most comfortable trading away. And with the season that he put together after he became an everyday player again, he could definitely be a hot commodity. And a team that is pitching flush could, you know, send over an ace that Boston so desperately wants in exchange for a cost-controllable center fielder.
Mike, free agent prediction and your team that makes the biggest trade.
Free agent prediction, I guess I would say Greinke going to the Astros. He makes sense as a right-hander in a park that has a short left field fence. He would neutralize right-handers a little bit more. Keuchel is left-handed, so he pairs up well with the current ace there. They have a lot of money to spend. In terms of a big trade team, that, you know, I would have said the Red Sox, but Matt got to go first, so jerk. We'll have a conversation about this afterwards. But I would say, barring that, the Padres are a real good bet because, you know, they didn't trade all of their prospects last offseason or this season to attempt to get better. AJ Preller is seriously under the gun there after his moves didn't really pan out for the Padres this year. And I think he's going to need to wheel and deal a little bit in order to, I guess, save his job and to hopefully put a winning team on the field.
Well, I get to go last, so I can't pick none of what you guys just said. And I'm looking through all of these players, and I'm trying to pick one that I feel that could go somewhere. And I know Toronto is going to need some pitching. They're probably not going to be able to get David Price. So this was in my gut, and I'm afraid to say it because I may embarrass myself, but I'm going to say Jordan Zimmermann to the Blue Jays. I think they need a pitching need, and Zimmermann fits what they're looking for. It's not as pricey as David Price, no pun intended, or Greinke or Cueto, so I think they're going to go after Zimmermann, and that makes sense for both sides. In terms of a team I see making a big trade, I feel like this is cheating, but it's Billy Beane, so I'm going to say the A's. They're a team that has talent. I know they said they're not going to trade Sonny Gray and Josh Reddick, but I feel like if a team came along and offered them a big enough deal that they may trade one of those guys, probably Reddick more than Gray. They still have a ton of talent that they can move in terms of prospects if they want to try to compete next year. And he seems to always make a big trade. The Donaldson trade, nobody saw coming. So I guess that's what I'll go with the A's, and probably will look like a fool, but hey, whatever.
Well, and they're already connected to Arenado, aren't they?
I didn't know this, so see.
I thought I had heard something about them potentially being interested in Nolan Arenado.
All right, well, that makes me feel better, Mike. It makes me feel like I have a better chance of being right with this, so you're making me feel better. That's why I have you on the show, Mike. You make me feel better.
I do what I can.
So I think that's going to do it for us this week, guys. Tomorrow starts free agency, and tomorrow meaning Friday. We're recording this Thursday night. It'll be out on Friday. And I'm sure with our luck, Matt, you and me have done this a number of times where we record a show and then something happens.
Yeah, I'm sure Granky will be, you know, pitching in Japan.
Yeah, next, or something
by tomorrow with our luck.
And we'll have to.
Oh, that'd be exciting.
We'll have to record.
Wouldn't that be kind of amazing?
You know what? That would make for an interesting like midday show where we just kind of just we're like, well, what happened? We're like,
an emergency podcast.
Yeah, yeah, it would be like 3 in the morning. We're like, we don't know what just happened, but Zach Greinke's pitching in Japan, and I guess baseball's over. I don't know.
That's now the thing that I want to happen most is to wake up, you know, in a week or so, and Zach Greinke gets a $300 million contract to go pitch in Japan.
He'd take it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, because you know what? Doesn't he have social anxiety? He wouldn't have to talk to the media.
Well, listen.
I mean, I'm just saying.
I think he's enough of an iconoclast that he would absolutely do that if there was an offer that would rival. But nobody has that kind of money over there to do that. So
now I want it to happen just so I can see the baseball world freak out and we look like geniuses for calling it.
Oh, it'd be fantastic. Team chaos.
Yeah. So all right. So I'm sure when this gets out tomorrow, something will have happened and we'll have to do another show or something. This is how this works for us. So thank you for joining us once again. I'm sure all three of us will be back next week, hopefully, to maybe break down what has happened since we've last spoke, and maybe preview some more things with the rumors that will obviously circulate over the next couple of days. So, guys, once again, Matt, Mike, thanks for joining me, and I'll see you guys next week.
Thanks, Chris.
See ya.